It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today, we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Ahwatukee preschools lose fight over pot dispensary. Phoenix's new bulk trash system riles residents. Ahwatukee professor publishes new book. Former Ahwatukee candidate hails arrest. Tempe business cleaning up environmentally. And developer plans to demolish Tempe office for new industrial project. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Ahwatukee preschools lose fight over pot dispensary by Howard Fisher. Two Ahwatukee preschools last week lost their fight with the Arizona Department of Health Services to block the award of a marijuana dispensary license to the owner of a nearby building. The fight dates back to 2017 when Grace Garden Christian Preschool at 10841 South 48th Street and Ahwatukee Preschool across the street on the Mountain View Lutheran Church campus discovered that DHS had awarded the dispensary license to a Valvoline Express Care garage less than 10 feet away from Grace Garden's playground. Grace Garden and other nearby neighbors at the time held a protest on its campus, and the then preschool director said her facility had been a neighborhood institution for over a decade. The court's decision may be moot because the Valvoline garage is now occupied by Greylick Automotive. Still, the decision by the Arizona Court of Appeals last week sets a precedent in that it found that a voter-approved law to keep marijuana dispensaries away from schools doesn't apply to preschools. It was unclear whether Grace Garden filed the appeal, as the appellant is listed as 3SL Family LLC. Their attorney did not respond to a request for comment, and the new director of Grace Garden did not reply to a call either. In a split decision, the judges said it may well be possible that those who crafted the state's first medical marijuana law in 2010 did not want the dispensaries located near schools. That measure forbids the Department of Health Services from licensing a facility within 500 feet of an existing public or private school. An appellate judge, David Gass, writing for the majority, acknowledged the law does not define school. But he said that there is no way the law can be read to also require that 500-foot buffer around preschools. Simply put, Gass said, a preschool is a licensed daycare facility, and the fact that they may offer some educational programs is legally irrelevant. The majority ruling drew criticism from appellate judge Andrew Jacobs. The voter's intent was plain: to prevent schoolchildren from exposure to marijuana and to keep a legal business that is selling marijuana away from a school and its occupants, he wrote in his dissent. Gass, however, said courts cannot make such rulings strictly on how they interpret the intent of those who crafted the measure. In this case, voters. Instead, he said, judges have to look at the plain language of the law. The statute says those seeking to open marijuana dispensaries have to provide an address for where it will be sold and where it will be cultivated, neither of which may be within 500 feet of a public or private school already in existence. This case came to the court because a company that was denied a license complained that the successful applicant was disqualified because the site was within 500 feet of two preschools. Gass said that, despite the fact the Medical Marijuana Act does not define school or preschool, there are multiple reasons to believe that the former does not include the latter. The etymology of preschool alone shows it means something before, and thus apart from school, he wrote. Then there's the Arizona Constitution, which requires the state to provide a public school system, and that is designed to include everything from kindergarten through universities open to pupils between ages 6 and 21. It expressly excludes preschool-age children, Gass said. By contrast, he said, preschools are licensed by the health department as child care facilities, and they are not subject to the same requirements as public and private schools. Jacobs, however, said one of these preschools requires teachers to have a bachelor's degree and has a curriculum focused on science, technology, engineering, and math. The other has weekly lesson plans including reading and writing, physical activity, art, and science, and both send report cards to parents. Gass and appellate judge Brian Furia, who agreed with him in the 2-1 decision, were unconvinced. None of that, Gass wrote, is mandated by statute or regulations, and the facilities could cease offering them at any time, he said. They have no attendance requirements, he continued. They have no grading requirements. They have no educational requirements for the caregivers. A child care facility need not have any of them. The bottom line, said Gass, is that they are bound by what the words say. We decline the invitation to rewrite the law under the guise of interpreting it, even if we divine a more desirable, intended outcome than the text allows, he said. Still, Gass said, that does not leave those who want dispensaries kept away preschools without a remedy. If the legislature and governor disagree with our interpretation, they have the means of amending the voter-ended act, he said. He conceded, though, that would not be a simple matter. The Voter Protection Act of the Arizona Constitution forbids lawmakers from making any changes to what voters have approved unless the alteration furthers the purpose of the original law. But making that claim, while putting in an additional distancing requirement, could prove a difficult legal task. Gass said tightening up the rules would threaten to restrict rather than expand access to medical marijuana, in direct contravention of the Act's express principal purpose. And even if it was concluded such a change furthers the purpose of the original law, Gass pointed out there's an additional hurdle. The Voter Protection Act also requires a 3/4 vote of both the House and Senate. That was, Ahwatukee Preschools Lose Fight Over Pot Dispensary. Our next article, Phoenix's New Bulk Trash System Riles Residents, by AFN News Staff. The Phoenix Public Works Department's switch to bulk trash pickups by appointment hasn't been sitting well with some Ahwatukee residents. Social media has been peppered with complaints by people who have been unable to get an appointment through the department's online portal, and some who have been frustrated by the system say they've called to complain and no one answers. I just left a voicemail for our councilman, one poster complained. 3 months to schedule is insane. I have a baby coming and I want to get rid of stuff before baby arrives. Another wrote, I just went online to schedule. I'm off Chandler and 44th. No options at all in 2024 or 2025. Do they only release dates in the morning? There's got to be something available in the next few months, right? Still another wrote, I was able to get a day in November. This was 2 weeks ago. But when I scheduled it, it looked like it was one of the last ones before January 1st. Same, replied another. Offered only one date in a 3-month period. Wrote an email, they don't care. One resident who got an appointment mused, I'm scheduled for 11/11. Neighbor across the street had an appointment today. Seems like the system should have offered me today since they were already making a trip here. Now they have to come out here again. Not sure how that saves them money. And two posters said they gave up and just took their trash to a dump, with one contending, this was by design, to pay a third-party hauler. Lamented another, the old system was great because there were pickers who would come around and grab usable or fixable stuff, saved landfill space. And one vented, Phoenix following in federal government footsteps. No common sense. Residents beginning on September 30th were able to make appointments at phoenix.gov/publicworks/bulktrash for pickups as the city inaugurated the new collection system, which officials say will be more efficient. In laying out the program for a city council subcommittee earlier this year, Deputy Public Works Director Justine Cook said the switch represents an effort to really focus on enhancing our customer experience and staying up on industry trends. Public Works sanitation crews serve 422,000 homes across 517 miles, and the 86 tons of bulk trash it collects a week breaks down to about 400 pounds per home, according to Cook. We travel 420,000 miles annually with our bulk trash units, Cook said, and based on a 2019 study that we conducted, we found that about 25% of our residents are using the program. Quarterly pickups required a hodgepodge network of routes that Cook said easily confused homeowners because it was a little hard to read. We've been doing this program for about 30 plus years, where we work on a 52-week collection cycle, and we're looking to really enhance and transition that program into an appointment-based program, Cook said, noting the new system mirrors one Peoria started over a year ago. The appointment-based program is really set up to align with our customer expectations and the demand of the program itself, she said. It helps us with utilizing new technologies, and we're in line with how the industry has evolved over the last 30 years and how to best provide that service. With our current program, we literally drive every single street within the city four times a year looking for piles that may or may not be out, which requires us to have a certain number of crews out looking for those piles and providing service, she said. Asked about the complaints, Public Works spokesman Spencer Blake said, the scheduling portal operates on a rolling calendar, so more appointments open up each day. Also, customers can normally only book appointments up to 4 weeks in advance, as noted on our website, so booking into next year, especially next summer, would not be available yet anyway. We have, however, made adjustments so that the calendar is open 8 weeks in advance for the time being, given the current high demand for appointments. He reiterated the message on the Public Works online page, which states, if you're trying to schedule a bulk trash appointment and do not see available dates, all appointments are currently booked. We encourage you to check the online portal frequently or call our office at 602-262-6251 for assistance, as new appointments may become available. The online scheduler is the fastest and most convenient way to secure an appointment. Thank you for your understanding and patience. Blake said, customers in some areas of the city are booking available appointments faster than customers in other areas. As with a doctor's office or in-home repairs, appointments for a popular service often get booked up quickly. Because we are still only in the third week of the new program, we know it will take time to get used to the changes. As we gather more data over time about customer scheduling habits, appointment locations, and appointment quantities, we will look at adjusting the number of available appointments while staying within our capacity to handle them in a timely manner. In response to a question about how one resident saw a neighbor's trash picked up and they couldn't get an appointment that same day, Blake said, keep in mind that bulk trash appointments are scheduled geographically, just like weekly trash recycling pickups are. For example, if your curbside trash is collected on Mondays, the dates available to you for bulk trash appointments will be on Wednesdays. That means that a driver will only be visiting a given area of town, at most once per week. And he said, we apologize if people have had trouble reaching us on the phone. We have staff in our customer contact center Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We do encourage residents to contact us with any concerns about the program so we can work together to address the issue and identify collection solutions. Meanwhile, two small business owners saw an opportunity in all the complaints. A Mesa rubbish hauler kept posting his phone number as a reply to each one, while the other wrote, I'm a local handyman, and if you can group up with neighbors, I can do group pickups, which would lower the cost. That was Phoenix's new bulk trash system, Riles Residents. You are listening to the East Valley News on SunSounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then, click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Ahwatukee professor publishes new book by AFN News staff. Ahwatukee professor Dr. Neil A. Lester has published a significant addition to a resume filled with impressive accomplishments ranging from books to opinion pieces and blogs to lectures, keynote addresses, interviews and conference presentations, and other academic and more general activities. He has released his 8th book, Social Justice in Action, Models for Campus and Community, a collection of essays and reflections that he says showcase practical approaches to diversity, equity, and inclusion, ways to build community, earn trust, tell unheard stories, and develop solutions to problems. Lester, Foundation Professor of English at Arizona State University, said the book is rooted in humanities work and emphasizes the principles of Humanity 101, a program that evolved from Project Humanities, of which he is the founding director. The award-winning initiative, which Lester founded at ASU in 2011, connects the university and diverse local communities for engaged, inclusive, multidisciplinary public conversations about the intersections of humanities, social justice, racial, gender, sexual identities, and more. The mission of Project Humanities is to facilitate critical conversations among diverse communities through talking, listening, and connecting, according to its mission statement. By exploring shared ideas and experiences, Project Humanities is committed to broadening audience perspectives and showing the interconnectedness of humanities within and across disciplines, positively impacting how people think and behave in our daily lives. Lester's new book also looks at higher education and critiques the ways in which institutions reinforce power structures and often exclude marginalized voices, Lester said. This volume has been a long time coming, and so much about the world has changed since work on it began 4 years ago. Mainly George Floyd's murder and the global pandemic, he said in a release. The volume includes 20 contributions and has a range of people, including traditional academic scholars and non-scholars, inside and beyond the academy. It offers social justice theoretical and practical perspectives from high school and college educators, an architect, a stage and screen actor, dancers, a theater practitioner, an evolutionary biologist, a university student group, and poets, among others. Lester said the book aims to challenge and affirm the justice work that seeks to reclaim humanity more broadly and to amplify everyone's potential for human decency and human dignity. The book underwent 2 levels of anonymous peer review, first a prospectus review and then complete manuscript review, and won considerable praise. One reviewer commented, "The chapters draw together articles that are conceptual, reflective, and applied, and as such, create a design that offers a multidimensional view of the problem space and presumably a multidimensional view for seeing and assessing strategic actions." Another reviewer called it the most important manuscript I've read in years. It matches the urgency of our post-pandemic, post-George Floyd national and global contexts in content and form, the review added. Lester is hoping libraries and schools will add to the offerings. Social Justice in Action is available at Amazon and through the Modern Language Association of America. With his expertise in African American literature and culture, Lester's books and countless essays and book chapters have examined a range of topics, ranging from the race and gender politics of hair, black masculinities, and African American folklore, to Toni Morrison's children's books. In addition to his publications on Nozaki Shang, Alice Walker, Sapphire, and Zora Neale Hurston, Lester has done pioneering work on the N-word, having created and taught the first college course in the U.S. Lester will be holding a celebratory launch of the book at 6:30 p.m. on November 21st at the Changing Hands Bookstore in Phoenix at 300 West Camelback Road. The free event will feature Lester and several local contributing authors. That was Ahwatukee Professor Publishes New Book. Next up from the editorial page, former Ahwatukee candidate hails arrest, LD-12 Dems, by Marion and Paul Weish. This week's arrest of Ahwatukee's Jeff Kelly and his escalatory political terrorism has many different angles, some apparent from the news coverage, some still behind the scenes. Among the latter, the courage and persistence among our friends in the LD12 Democratic community. When Mr. Kelly targeted us and our campaign 2 years ago, several in our campaign said enough's enough, taking extraordinary efforts to identify Kelly and stop him from escalating his election-related crimes. These friends persisted in the face of evidence that Kelly was a Christian nationalist gun fetishist who stated on social media that blood may have to be spilt. These friends persisted even after the understaffed Phoenix police declined to interview Mr. Kelly, leading to no charges being filed against him in 2022, even after he sent a message by spreading piles of the shredded signs at our neighborhood entrance. The PPD said they were wary of confronting him. And we thank our LD12 community for being the activists who persisted this year after matching the 2024 Tempe shooting vehicle to Kelly's 2022 vehicle and getting the authorities to apprehend Kelly. Ahwatukee is filled with behind-the-scenes heroes. This incident highlights the democratic heroes in our community who are fighting to protect democracy. It is not only about winning elections, it is also about maintaining the rule of law and the integrity of our elections process. We are proud to call them our friends. We go now to Tempe News. Tempe Business Cleaning Up Environmentally by Laurie Merrill. You could say cleaning is in April Prothero's blood. After all, her mother earned a living cleaning other people's houses. Prothero's mom and good friend did her scrubbing, vacuuming, polishing, mopping, and washing while the children were at school in Chandler, said Prothero, a Corona del Sol high school graduate. The entire neighborhood were their clients, said Prothero. I didn't plan on following in her footsteps, but here I am. Today, Prothero's business is like her mother's operation on steroids. 14 years ago, she became founder and chief executive officer of a locally grown green residential cleaning company, Going Green LLC. The thriving Tempe business has been honored by Arizona State University's Sun Devil 100 Awards program as one of the fastest-growing companies in its size category, run or owned by an ASU alumnus for 5 years in a row, from 2020 to 2024. We have more than 200 clients we serve on a regular basis, and they are mostly from the East Valley, said Prothero, who lives in Scottsdale. We've been cleaning some of their houses for 14 years. In addition to Mesa, Chandler, Tempe, Gilbert, Ahwatukee, and Scottsdale, Prothero's 15 employees also serve clients in Paradise Valley and Phoenix. Her roundabout path to following in her mother's squeaky clean footprints started after she graduated from ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business in 2006. Her asthma also played a part. Skilled in budgeting, event management, and software implementation, Prothero spent her first 4.5 years after graduation in retirement plan administration. Corporate America took a toll. I was in a cube, she said. I really missed being active. I felt the itch to get out and be independent. Taking a cue from her mother, Prothero began cleaning houses and office buildings on the weekends and in her free time, but with a twist. Because traditional household cleaning products triggered her asthma, Prothero used supplies she created using vinegar, water, baking soda, and other natural non-caustic ingredients. Word spread about her cleaning acumen and eco-friendly products, and it wasn't too long before Prothero had a brimming schedule. She decided to take a gamble, quit her desk job, and concentrate only on what had been her side gig. It flourished. I quit my corporate job, and within a year I was able to own and operate Going Greenhouse full-time, Prothero said. At first, she was the only employee, but as she got busier, it was only fitting that her mother added her elbow grease to the operation. For the first few years, she only hired family members or friends that she knew she could trust. Prothero was nervous about expanding the business to include more employees. At some point, I knew I had to start hiring strangers, and I was worried about how that would change the dynamic, she said. But I got really lucky. I've had really good luck finding hardworking, wonderful, and kind employees. Today, the business continues to grow, and now Prothero's company is cleaning the home of one of her mother's original clients. That was Tempe Business Cleaning Up Environmentally. And finally, developer plans to demolish Tempe office for new industrial project, by Audrey Jensen. An aging property in Tempe is about to get a second life. Prominent Valley developer Lincoln Property Company is planning to turn a single-story, 218,000-square-foot office property built in 1977 into a new industrial campus called Sky Harbor Logistics. It's located at 1515 West 14th Street in the Sky Harbor submarket across 16.25 acres and includes a 1,044-space parking garage. The main building was previously tapped for industrial uses, but was converted to office in 2016. It is also partially leased to CarMax, although that lease will soon expire. Dallas-based Lincoln will demolish the existing buildings and replace them with two industrial facilities, each totaling 127,000 square feet, for an overall 254,000 square feet of new space. Lincoln is the largest commercial real estate developer in the Valley, where it has spearheaded several major industrial parks. Its work includes the 4 million square foot Park 303 in Glendale and the 2.3 million square foot Luke Field Park. The company is also partnering with Harvard Investments to develop more than $3 billion in housing and commercial space around the future State Route 30 in Goodyear. Developers have been finding ways to turn old office buildings across the valley into other uses. David Crumwitty, senior executive president at Lincoln, said Sky Harbor Logistics is a prime example of adaptability in the Phoenix market. The company plans to start redeveloping the site as early as the second quarter of 2025. Butler Design Group is the architect, and a general contractor has not yet been selected. That was Developer Plans to Demolish Tempe Office for New Industrial Project. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.